You're listening to KTOO. I'm Jamie Deep. Thanks for tuning in. Last month's commercial salmon harvest in the South Alaska Peninsula, commonly known as Area M, was the lowest in four decades, according to preliminary data from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Fishermen in the Shumagin Island and South Unimak areas harvested about 720,000 salmon through the end of June, the second lowest June on record since the 1980s. Technically, the lowest harvest occurred in 2001, but area management biologist Matthew Key says that year was an outlier due to a price dispute that kept many boats off the water.
There was almost no fishing. So I would say with fishing occurring, this is probably the lowest harvest in June.
Sockeye salmon, the primary target species, came in at under 500,000 fish last month. That's less than a third of the 10-year average. One possible factor, the Drift gillnet fleet has been voluntarily avoiding areas with high chum concentrations to support conservation goals. That's because of record low chum returns in parts of western Alaska.
They've been doing an excellent job of self-imposing these restrictions and trying to avoid high, abundant chum areas, curtailing their own fisheries.
So Keith says those efforts alone don't fully explain the steep drop. The fleet has followed similar voluntary practices for the past 3 years, and the June harvest has never been this low. On the other side of the peninsula, Bristol Bay is seeing a strong run that's right on par with preseason forecasts. That contrast has Keith scratching his head.
Unfortunately, my fish crystal ball is pretty fuzzy.
The South Penn fisheries include salmon stocks from multiple regions, so Key says it's difficult to pinpoint a single cause. Factors like ocean conditions, migratory routes, and stock origin could all play a role. July numbers so far are looking much stronger, but Key says it's very early still and didn't make any predictions. A group of students are at it again, setting up more cameras at Ann Arbor Wildlife Observatory near Wrangell. KSTK's Colette Czarnicki met up with them to get an update on what they've been up to this year.
13 T3 Alliance students visited Ann Arbor Wildlife Observatory twice this past June before bears were in full swing for salmon season. T3 is a science and math group that stands for Teaching Through Technology Alliance. Spencer Pettigrew graduated from Wrangell High School last year and is now attending Boise State University for neuroscience. He says the group set up two more cameras in addition to the two that were set up last year.
We have two cameras on the newly built photo blind overlooking the lower falls and fishing holes down there. We have one camera looking up the river and in creek, and then one camera right behind the observatory watching this crossroads where you see a bunch of different bears.
The group took the cameras offline before winter hit. In order to get all cameras working, they first had to set up a Starlink connection. Pettigrew said it was a bit of a conundrum. They had to raise it a few more feet from last year in order for a proper signal. They also had to redesign the electrical system to pull in solar energy. This is something Annika Herman intently focused on last year.
I sort of knew what was going on, but just dealing with these over and over again, because we had to cut them and redo them, was just a hassle. And then trying to figure out missing links, just making sure everything was just organized.
The T3 program began collaborating with the U.S. Forest Service a few years ago and started working at the Ann Arbor site last year. The group stayed in the nearby Ann Arbor Bay cabin for 3 to 4 nights each trip last month. It's a new cabin that was built after a spruce tree fell on the old one, located a half mile to the trailhead that leads to the wildlife observatory.
Bears were around the cabin, mink were running over. We actually saw moose on the other side of the bay, lagoon area.
That's Andrew Edens. He just graduated from Wrangell High School.
I think we were some of the first people to have such a, especially a large group in the very new cabin. And it was honestly great, very clean, and it smelled lovely of cedar.
Another student, Timothy Garcia, says the biggest highlight was working with Friends of Ann Arbor on social media outreach. He documented everything through photos and video for the new nonprofit organization.
Last year, there was a lot less of what we could say, and like we had a lot less photos and video to produce out to people. And so this year with Friends of Ann Arbor, it's trying to help a lot more to get that information out there to people, having it online, because the Ann Arbor website is honestly a bit lackluster.
He says they're putting more of a presence of their stories on Instagram, Facebook, and explore.org with the cameras. They also have their own website, and soon they plan to have videos on YouTube. Garcia says the goal is to reach as many people as far away as they can. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Zarnicki.
A search and rescue team from the Northwest Arctic community of Shungnak recovered the body of a man from the Kobuk River Saturday morning. According to Trooper Dispatch, 27-year-old Albert Lee of Shungnak fell into the water while operating his snow machine. When Lee did not surface, a local search and rescue team and troopers were notified. Lee's body was recovered about an hour later and transported to a local clinic. Life-saving efforts were unsuccessful. Troopers do not suspect foul play. This is the third aquatic death in the Northwest Arctic in the last month. Last week, search and rescue teams recovered the body of a Selawik boy from the Selawik River. And a man jailed in Anchorage died Friday after correctional officers restrained him during a fight, according to Alaska State Troopers. The Alaska Bureau of Investigation is now examining 53-year-old Jeffrey Foreman's death. Troopers say correctional officers were breaking up a fight early Friday between Foreman and his cellmate at the Anchorage Correctional Complex and restrained Foreman when he became combative. Troopers say he then became unresponsive. The Bureau is still investigating how officers restrained Foreman. Troopers say he was not seriously injured during the fight with his cellmate. Megan Barker, a spokeswoman for the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska, says the case raises longstanding concerns.
We are deeply disappointed to see that this case and this situation follows similar patterns as other deaths in custody that we have seen when it comes to people who've been in custody for short amounts of time.
Foreman's death comes after another inmate at the jail, William Farmer, was fatally beaten by his cellmate in December. Records show the cellmate was ordered to be transferred from the jail 4 days before the assault. Barker points out that in Foreman's case, records show that his bail was paid the day before he died, but not formally posted until Friday.
It just goes to show that we are seeing administrative issues, including not releasing people who have been dismissed by the courts in time, and it's resulting in deaths.
Department of Corrections officials were still investigating today why Foreman hadn't been released from jail. Although inmates die in prison for many reasons, Barker says they are united by the state's responsibility for people in its care.
And so whether it's people who die by suicide, complications, or improper treatment for medical issues or use of force, each death represents a failure by the state to keep Alaskans alive while incarcerated, and there has to be accountability for that.
Barker says the ACLU is conducting its own investigation into Foreman's death. And firefighters have been working to contain wildfires near the interior community of Delta Junction for weeks, and as if that job wasn't already hard enough, some crews are having trouble with bears. But sometimes big furry problems require big furry solutions. As Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk, a team of specially trained working dogs have arrived to keep firefighters safe from bears, and the bears safe from lethal consequences.
You ready? Check it out.
7-year-old Marty and 3-year-old Skye are patrolling a camp near the roughly 23-acre, 12-mile fire southeast of Delta Junction. They joined about 50 firefighters there late last month. The two big, fluffy, black-and-white dogs are led around by their handler, Nils Peterson, until they see something behind a line of trees. They have a sharp message for whatever it is.
We can find bears. The dogs will then bark at them. They behave very aggressively towards bears and communicate to the bear that we know it's there and that it can leave and it has to leave and this is the way out.
Marty and Skye are a mother-daughter team of Karelian bear dogs, but their passing resemblance to bears isn't what gives the breed its name.
These are big game hunting dogs from Finland that were traditionally used to hunt brown bear and moose.
Peterson directs the Wind River Bear Institute, a nonprofit that offers non-lethal solutions to complicated human-wildlife conflicts. He's been bringing bear dogs out to fire camps for the last 5 years. The organization also advises on strategies like using electric fences and bear spray, or hiding bear attractants. Fire camps tend to be full of those, according to Ben Gage, a spokesperson for the crews currently working around Delta Junction.
It's sometimes hard to completely get the smell off you when you're working outside on a crew and you don't have access to daily showers, you know, even the smell of fire oil, fire on you, the smell of your clothes from working in the day.
You heard that right. Bears like bar oil. The stuff firefighters use to lubricate their chainsaws. It's usually made out of vegetable or mineral oil.
Yeah, there have been reports of bears getting into inorganic materials, you know, ripping up things that aren't necessarily edible or we wouldn't think are edible.
Gage says he's gotten several reports about encounters between bears and firefighters this season. They've been wandering through camps and even into one unlucky firefighter's tent. So far, nobody's gotten hurt. But they're ready to use deadly force if necessary.
And then we have more of the reactionary measures. And one of them is using, you know, chainsaws and loud noises to scare away bears. And as a last resort, getting qualified shooters out on incidents.
Peterson, the handler, says having barky bear dogs on guard reduces the likelihood of having to use that last resort. And he says they provide some peace of mind to folks who are just trying to get a good night's rest.
The barking in the middle of the night may not be everyone's favorite thing. It's preferable than hearing a bear trash in your camp.
He says, in spite of all that bark, the dogs are as friendly to people as they are ferocious to bears. And that can be a morale boost for tired firefighters.
These people are away from their family, away from their friends, usually working long hours. And so to be able to visit with the dogs and pet a dog, and especially a dog that's helping keep you safe out here, is really pleasant.
Spokespeople for the fire crews say they're endlessly thankful for that support, which makes their job a bit more bearable. Peterson says Marty and Sky are also grateful for all the belly rubs and treats they get from firefighters. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
And in Juneau right now, it's currently 73 degrees and mostly cloudy. And the sun, it looks like the sun is here to stay through the rest of this week, with highs in the mid to upper 60s and lows in the mid 50s. This is KTOO. Thanks for tuning in.